Welcome back, friends. This is Between Two Millennials. I'm your host, Jonathan McClelland, and as this is a Thursday episode, we're mixing it up a little bit. I have my good friend, Matthew Spence, joining me on this podcast today.
Hello.
Matt, who are you? Why are you here? Where are you from? What makes you significant? And most important question, are you a millennial?
Oh, man. Who am I? I'm trying to figure that one out. No.
Deep. We're way too early into the podcast to be asking those type of questions.
I've been on the quest to figure that out for the last year. No.
It's just been a straight vision quest, dude. I haven't worked. I haven't eaten. I've just been envisioning
Who
everything.
Who am I? What is the meaning of
life?
You
recently emerged from the woods, right? In only a loincloth.
Yeah, that's true. That happened.
Sorry. All right, go ahead.
Anyways, I am Matthew Spence. You can call me Matt. Me and Jonathan have been friends. I guess we met it. Technically, we met at Passion Conference. Do you remember that?
Did we?
Yeah.
Through who?
Will set me up to stay with you and
Kate. Oh! Yeah, that's right. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, that's a funny story.
Yeah. We'll save that one. But, yeah, I've been friends with Jonathan since, really, kind of met him through Will, one of his buddies from high school. We've just kept up with each other through college.
You're one of the few people who came out to visit me during college.
Yeah, that is true.
Yep.
For my interview.
Yep.
That was a fun day and a half. I am currently in a little bit of a weird gap stage. I'm starting medical school in August, and I graduated a year ago, so May 2016, and I've kind of done a bunch of random stuff since then. Currently, I'm happy to announce that I just retired from my landscaping job.
Wow.
My
big deal.
1 week of landscaping. We worked 60 hours, and this was, I think, the hottest week of the summer.
It's pretty hot. They give you a medal?
No, they should have, though.
Yeah.
No, they were actually making fun of me the whole week, I think, just because I'm white. It was me and 5 Hispanic guys on the crew. But anyways, I'm just trying to make a little money back right now and prepare for school.
Are you a millennial?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
If you had to give yourself 3 stereotypical millennial traits, what would they be?
None of them, because I only hear negative traits.
No, there's positive traits about millennials.
Like?
We're really good with technology.
That's true. We're good at multitasking.
Yeah, we're a diverse group of folks.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about that the other day. We always are said to be like the most distracted generation, but I like to think of it as we're just good at multitasking.
I think something else we're really good at is adapting. We have the ability to adapt like no generation before us. Maybe because the technology around us is adapting so quickly. But anyway, so Matt and I both recently got back from some big voyages across many oceans.
Yes.
In several different countries. I'm going to give my recap on a normal Monday podcast, but Matt is going to give a recap on his trip, and we're going to kind of dive in and hear about a lot of the stuff that you learned while over in Europa over there.
Oh, Europa. Yes. Let's do it.
So, just give me the timeline, where kind of how everything happened.
Yeah. So, like I said, I intentionally deferred school to take this year off. And I did it with one of my main intentions being trying to save up and travel some. But before that, I guess a little background. I worked at an orthopedic clinic all of, I guess, May until like January, saving up, and then I did a 4-month discipleship program where I was actually, like you said earlier, I was in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was in the woods trying to find myself in a way.
Oh, wow. That was just totally off the cuff, unplanned.
But yeah, no, it was like, we were in a really small rural town in Alabama, did this school called Legacy School of Discipleship. Same pretty much routine, same thing for 4 months. I think there were 16 of us in the program, so just, yeah, that was, it was interesting. So doing that for 4 months, which was awesome.
Did they, like, lock you in a cabin in the woods and, like, give you a Bible? Like, what did that look like?
That's actually what it was. We had to memorize the whole thing.
The whole Bible?
Yeah.
That was your ticket out?
Yeah, that was the exit exam. All right, start with Genesis 1.
So I could just ask you a random verse on the spot right now, and you would know it.
Yeah. Right. So anyway,
first Maccabees 2:13. Go.
Thou shalt not put Matt to the test.
Okay.
That looked like just being with this group. A guy named Francois from South Africa started the school, and we just delved into scripture every day and the deeper Christian life and what that looks like in the real world, and just had a lot of time processing stuff with one another, and obviously spending a lot of time in the Word. It was really awesome. It was kind of, at times it felt like I was at a monastery because I was just so outside of civilization, and I had no phone service, pretty much.
Dang.
I had Wi-Fi down at the lodge where we had class and whatnot, but for the most part, it was, like, very kind of plucked out of real life and put in, like, a sort of training and, you know, reflective state of life.
What was the nearest, like, city?
Auburn.
Okay.
Yeah, Auburn was about 45 minutes, which Auburn's not a big
city.
Not
a big city at
all.
It's just
a college town, but anyways, that finished in the very end of April, and I had like 3 days to get ready and packed and hop on a plane for Europe. So, like, going from just, you know, barely ever hopping in my car, like, you know, waking up and walking to the lodge and, you know, hanging out every day with the same 15 people or so, to flying all across the world and traveling and being around, you know, rubbing shoulders with thousands of people every day, was quite the transition. But it was awesome. Wouldn't have had it any other way. But yeah, I left Legacy in, I think, like May 3rd, flew into Madrid. And
wait, what country is that?
Spain.
Spain, okay, all right. So Spain is where the adventure begins.
Yes, it started in Spain. So I'll just go through where all we went. We did Madrid, Toledo for a day, Barcelona, London, Scotland, Iceland. And we were supposed to go to Budapest after Iceland, but we slept on those tickets too long and found ourselves frantically trying to find a different flight to buy. And
this is from Iceland to Budapest?
From Iceland. Okay, we were supposed to go to Budapest, but
it's probably
tickets
kind of
sold
expensive
out
to get off the island.
Yeah,
too.
And we were like, oh, we can just go wherever else. But then we realized, wait, there's only so many destinations out of Iceland on a Friday afternoon. So we ended up going with the cheapest ticket available to Gdansk, Poland.
Gdansk.
Yes, Gdansk.
That's quite a name.
Yeah, it's
Gdansk, Gdansk.
Yeah, it's a really Gdansk. I felt like it was a really awkward word to say. Gdansk. But anyways, not a very touristy place. Super random stop, but ended up being pretty eventful. So Gdansk, Poland. Then we had an 8-hour layover in Milan, Italy, going to Prague. So Milan, then Prague, and that was it. Then we came home all in a month. All
right, cool. Well, it was a good podcast.
Yep.
We'll see you next week,
guys. It was great to be here. See you guys.
So without necessarily like going into the every single day details, what were, I guess, some of the best conversations that you had on this trip?
Oh, man. One of my favorite memories from the trip in general. So obviously you rub shoulders with a lot of other people traveling, which was something I was hoping for, and didn't realize that it was going to be so easy, because we stayed in hostels most of the time. And
great way to talk to people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and everyone is in kind of the same state of mind. Like, we're all, like, 20-somethings just trying to, like, have our see-the-world experience. Yep. And, yeah, it was just, like, yeah, it was super easy to mingle, and everybody was really outgoing and whatnot. But in Barcelona, we stayed at this really cool hostel, and I ended up meeting three people in particular who me and my friend Luke and Doug, we hung out with a lot, especially me and Luke. A girl named Sophia from Portugal, a guy from Egypt living in Dubai named Mohammed. We called him Mo. And then a guy from India named Part. And
P-A-R-T?
P-A-R, I think it was D-T or something.
Part. Okay.
But, so me, Part, Mo, and Sophia, and Luke, one night we got a bottle of wine and went up to this spot that overlooked the city and just, like, hung out and had conversations about just... it was just really cool because we were so... Each of us were so different, had different worldviews, different upbringings, obviously, and at the same time, we connected on so much just being humans. And I realized, like, that's when it was a kind of a cool aha moment of, wow, there's, like, this common denominator of just, you know, our humanity that makes us really, once you zoom out a little bit, none of us are really that different after all. And we just talked about embarrassing stories. Like, I think we all shared our most embarrassing stories. And that was fun, and we all tried to, like, copy each other's accents. And all of them, when they were doing me and Luke's American accent, they just were like, "Hey, I'm from America." Like, they sounded like they just deepened their voice and spoke really monotone. It's like, that's not how we sound.
That's not at all.
But anyways, it was just fun. And oh, I taught them some American dance moves.
Swing dance?
Yep, taught them how to swing dance.
Nice.
They were very impressed by that one. And yeah, it was just the scene was amazing. Like, sitting on this cool, like, random spot that Sophia knew about, looking out over the city at night and, you know, having a glass of wine and just hanging out with people my age from Egypt, India, and Portugal, of all places. That was awesome. Another really cool little snippet was in Iceland, we actually stayed with a family. Their names were Elfa and Steini.
Was that planned?
Yes, it was planned. So, super random connection, but a guy I did Legacy with knew this family somehow. Kind of a long story. But told me to email them, and I emailed them and said I was coming to Iceland, and they just immediately offered, like, "Hey, you're welcome to stay with us."
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. They were so hospitable. Steini, I think, works for, like, the education system, and Elfa was an oral surgeon there.
Okay.
The wife. And they had a couple kids. One had moved out, and the other was, like, an 8-year-old girl named Elizabeth. But
they forgot the H.
What's that?
They forgot the age. No,
yeah, I know. That's what I said. But apparently they just don't do that in Iceland. Man, they, like, every night they would just cook an all-out feast for us.
Really?
Yeah. They were just so hospitable and treated us super well. And that was fun because that was the only time we stayed with a local. And they were just telling us random stuff about Iceland and recommending little spots that people don't usually go to and whatnot. Yeah, it was just cool. Kind of, I got a really good taste of Icelandic culture there.
Yeah. Were you in Reykjavik?
Yeah, it was right outside of Reykjavik where we stayed. But man, there's so many other, like, little conversations, but those are a couple highlights.
I have a question about Iceland for you. So I'm reading a book at the moment. That's
nice.
I read books. Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry, I just wanted to throw that in there real quick. I don't know if I ever mentioned that on the podcast before. It's a pretty big book. Not just a picture book. Thank you very much. No. So a book I'm reading is about how certain societies in the past have collapsed, and Iceland is actually one of the test cases for it because the initial settlers of Iceland were all Norse from Norway.
Yeah,
obviously, because if you're Norse, you're Norwegian. And The terrain in Iceland is different from Norway for a whole variety of different reasons. But one of the big issues that are there is almost all of Iceland is deforested and they have really bad erosion.
Yes.
I know you weren't necessarily looking for this, but did you notice them making attempts to kind of remedy that situation?
Ooh. I thought that they were a very efficient... They planned their city pretty efficiently. Mm-hmm. Mainly, the only real observation I made was that they used like their hot spring natural water to provide energy. And like for instance, they had a hot tub on their balcony, and they just pulled this little nozzle, and water started bubbling up from the bottom that was coming from just natural hot spring water.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, it was super hot. obviously, but you know, I'm not sure what else I really noticed or we had talked about, but it's true. It's a beautiful place, but it's very barren.
Yeah,
it's all like, you know, there's huge, just fields of just rock bottom, like kind of basalt rock, volcanic rock all around the ground. There's not a lot of green there at all. There's like no trees.
Hmm.
Which Steiny said that the Vikings came and like cut down all.
They took them all out.
Yeah,
yep, they did,
all of them. And he said that, and I was like, I don't know if that's true. How does one people group take an entire island's trees out? But
that's a conversation for another podcast, because basically the book I'm reading is about how
it explains that
different groups have come into certain island territories, small and large, and just completely wrecked the natural. Ecosystem and environment.
Wow.
Easter Island's a good example. Japan almost got wrecked because of it. Australia is a massive example, and they're dealing with a lot of struggles today. Anyway, that's not the purpose of the podcast. But, what's his name? Pliny?
Steiny.
Like come a Steiny of beer. Yes. He's speaking truth there.
Steiny was the man.
So, from a... let's say a travel perspective, what was your favorite destination?
I'd have to say Scotland.
Really? Why is that?
For many reasons. One of those being, in Scotland, we found that it was pretty much the same price to rent a camper van than to like stay and, you know, rent a car or whatnot.
So you rented a camper
van. So we rented a camper van. It ended up coming back to bite us a little bit because we backed into something and had to pay a pretty good chunk for that.
So. Oh, you literally backed into something? Like,
yeah.
You didn't, like, back into a bag deal?
No, we literally backed into a wall.
Okay, all right, got it. Who was driving?
That doesn't matter.
Okay, all right.
it wasn't me, but that was kind of one of the low points of the trip. The other one being having to sleep on the streets of Madrid one night because we missed a bus.
Well, would the camper van be equitable to an American RV?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like a big RV. But that was one of the main reasons I loved it, because more or less we were kind of confined to foot or bikes everywhere else. But having our own camper van, you know, we stocked it with food and just taking off and exploring Scotland, you know, at will.
How much haggis did you have in your van?
We didn't have any in our van, but I did eat it once.
You didn't keep haggis in your van? You're in Scotland and you're not eating haggis
so
every meal?
So uncultured of me. Darn it. we ate a lot of smoked salmon.
I thought literally the only thing they had there was haggis and scotch. That's the diet of the Scottish
people. Yeah, we walked in a grocery store and it was just aisles and aisles of scotch and haggis, man. Like, man, I just want some freaking cereal. Come on. You guys don't drink milk?
No grain. None at all.
Just haggis and scotch. but no, that was awesome. I mean, we went from Edinburgh, one little detour, which I'll talk about later, to Fife area in West Scotland, and then we cut all the way across to the Highlands and to Isle of Skye, and just the whole drive, like, it never was not stunning. I mean, it's more kind of like rolling hills in the west to just massive, incredible mountains. Maybe not massive compared to, like, out west here in America, but really cool mountains and Yeah, that was one of the reasons. The second reason is that Scotland is actually my motherland.
Oh.
And that was, I've always wanted to go to Scotland because of that, just because I found out that the Spences originally hailed from Scotland.
Mm.
So that was just a neat experience.
Well, I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because I recall a tale from a previous encounter between you and I. You actually, well, so here's the deal. Matt's family was lost. And, you know, according to the Bible, the lost shall be found. And so Matt was able to find his family. Would you like to tell that particular story?
Yeah, I found my family in Scotland. So this actually is a really cool story.
Wouldn't you preface it with that?
Funny you bring it up.
I don't know how I feel about it anymore.
Ah, darn it.
This is actually a really dumpy story.
Here's a story I'd like to tell. Take it as you will, good or bad. Nevertheless, it is a tale of sorts. Okay, so like I said, Scotland is my motherland. I found that out. I confirmed that. Freshman year in college, I took this course where it was actually a class about soils and civilizations. But we had to do a research project on where our ancestry linked back to in the 1400s. So I got on Ancestry.com and started a free trial, because it gives you a month, and you should do that if you haven't. But just dug away and found out that the Spences in the 1400s and before and after that too, they were in West Scotland in an area called Fife. It's on the coast north of Edinburgh, near St. Andrews. And the Spences, believe it or not, were actually lords in a certain area called Warmiston.
Okay. Don't get arrogant here.
I'm just saying.
I will not call you Lord Matt Spence.
It's
okay?
History. It's history,
oh, it's
okay?
It's history, okay. There's lots of things that are history.
Look, I'm just speaking strictly on a fact basis here. So.
Yeah, because as y'all know, this is a no alternative facts podcast.
Yep, exactly. No fake news. This is all real news here. So, anyways, yeah, there's this land called Warmiston. If you Google Laird of Warmiston, you'll find all these links on Google talking about the Spence family in Scotland. Because, they're pretty prominent. Oh, J-Mac is fact-checking me on that right now.
I'm looking up Laird of Warmiston right now.
Do it. W-O-R-M. No, O-R.
Worm.
Inston. Warminston. That's not right. Just try it. Anyways.
Just continue.
So, look, wait. Here.
How do you actually spell it?
W O R M I N S T O N.
Oh, I was way off. Dang.
I think.
Okay, anyway.
Look!
Continue with
Sir
your
David
story.
Smith. Oh, he's anyways, right wow. So they're a pretty prominent family. I don't know what happened when they came to America, because all of my relatives on the Spence side were pretty poor. They were farmers. And, anyways, so. I do all this research, find out that they had this estate. At one time, they had a castle there, and it was ruined somehow, and they rebuilt a house, I think in like the 1600s. But the house is still standing today in Warmiston, and I found out that it's been restored, and someone bought it and made this huge, fantastic garden on the property that people like can go to just and visit and walk through. So I was like, oh my gosh. I can go to the Warmiston house still. So it was about an hour and a half from Edinburgh. So I asked the guys if we could make that little detour. So we did. We drive up the coast. We find this sign eventually. I found kind of the address online. There's a sign that says Warmiston. And it's just a small one-way street. And we took it all the way down. And this was all like in the countryside. And we get down, and at the end of the street on the left, there's this big gate, and I can see this house over the gate. And I figured that that was the one, but I wasn't sure.
Is this the house?
That's
right here?
The one. Whoa, he pulled it up on Google Maps.
I found the house.
That is Warmiston House.
I
oh my gosh.
Warmiston House.
Wow, this is making me the nostalgia. It's just all coming back.
I'm going to put a link in the podcast description so you can go look at Warmiston House too.
Yes. So you know I'm not making it up. But,
well, I still don't know about that.
All right. Anyway. Well, here's my story. If it's real or not, you can be the judge. But the gates open and I see a few cars parked back there. But this is like 8 o'clock at night. It's light till like 10 o'clock there. But we stop the camper and I'm like, guys, I'm gonna walk back there. I don't know if that's trespassing or anything, but I mean, technically, it's kind of my
think
house.
It's trespassing. It's trespassing.
Well, I mean, not really though, because I'm a Spence, so I have some kind of rights there, don't I? So I thought. Anyways, I walk back and I walk up to the house, knock on the door. Nobody's there. I don't even know if anyone lives in that house. But I walk all around the property. There's a couple other little houses behind it, and I walk. The garden was like gated, so you couldn't get into it, but it was really, really pretty. And I was walking around, and it was really neat because when I was walking around, I had to like kind of had a little weird sentimental moment of like, wow, this is where my ancient ancestors grew up and frolicked around back in the day. It's almost like I've been here before. But anyways, I don't find anybody. I was really bummed because I wanted to just ask someone who maybe lived there about the house, and who knows, maybe they were Spence. I don't know. But we walk out to the front, we start to drive off, and there's this kind of cottage in the front that you pass right before the gate. And I looked in, and there is this old woman sitting in the front. So I was like, wait, guys, there's someone here. I'm going to go talk to her. They're like, dude, like, that's pretty intrusive. Like, come on. And then we just kind of like talk back and forth about it. And they're like, okay, yeah, fine. Just do it. It's probably, you know, it'll probably be worth it. So I go and I knock on the door, and this woman flings the door open and is like, what are you doing back here? It's just like
with that accent too.
What are you? Yes. And she's like pretty flustered. And I realized that I did intrude a little bit, but I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to intrude. So I'm a Spence. I didn't know what to say. So I was like, I'm a Spence. I'm from America. And I've always heard about this Warmiston House. And she's like, oh, you're a Spence, are ya? And she like brightened up all of a sudden. And she, apparently she's not a Spence. So her son, I think John something, forgot their last name. They bought the estate like 15, 20 years ago. She was explaining that to me, but she was like, yeah, this is the Spence, the Warmiston House. And, it was really cool. And she was like, actually right down the street, just right over there, there's another small cottage that the Spences still own. And I think that, John Spence, his daughter, Christiana, is there right now. You should go check. So we drive over, I knock on the door, and sure enough, this 30-year-old, you know, woman comes and opens the door, and I'm like, kind of still like, what do I say? Like, I'm this random dude from Tennessee, just in Scotland, and, you know, my ancient ancestor's house. And anyways, so I'm like, hey, sorry to bother you, but my name's Matt. I'm from Tennessee, and I'm actually a Spence, and I've heard about this house, and I wanted to check it out. And she was like, yeah, just one second. Let me change real quick.
Let me get my gun.
Her PJs. And she had a 1-year-old that was sleeping too. Oh, okay. But she invited us in, and we sat around, and she offered us a glass of scotch, of course.
And haggis, right?
No haggis, just the
what?
Scotch. Yeah, no haggis.
How? What is that hospitality? Goodness.
Well, the scotch I think was a super high dollar scotch, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, take back my comment.
Yeah,
anyway.
it was quite hospitable in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, we sit there with Christiana, my long lost sister of sorts, and we just kind of talk about how weird it is that I'm there and how awesome it is at the same time. And she told me a little bit more about the family history, about the history of the house, and how they've kind of redone it from how it used to always be since those new people bought it. And turns out she actually spent a year in Memphis in high school as an exchange student. So
of all places.
Yeah, I know. So she's like, I've actually been in Tennessee too. So super weird. But yeah, it was awesome. We were just kind of having a normal conversation, and in my head the entire time I was kind of trying to not freak. I mean, I was freaking out in my head. Just like, this is crazy. Like, I'm at my, you know, long lost family's house, just having a glass of scotch with, you know, my, I don't know. I'll just call her my sister.
Some sort of
I felt relative. Like she was my sister.
Yeah.
My sister. My long lost sister in Scotland. So yeah, that was pretty cool. It was pretty just confirming too of like, wow, yeah, this is actually where, you know, the Spences came from.
Yeah.
Not many people can, I think, say that they've gotten that experience. I mean, it was really neat.
That's quite the tale.
Yeah. I just made it up, so.
It's a total fable. It's a fabrication.
No, it is true. I have pictures to prove it, actually.
Well.
Have you seen the picture of me and Christiana?
Yeah, you did show me that picture. Yeah. The day that I do a similar vision quest as you to go to Scotland to find my ancestors.
Yeah, because you're a Scottish boy, too.
I'm very Scottish.
Maybe we were like neighbors.
We could have been. I don't know if the McClellans and the Spences got along, though.
Yeah, there were said to be lots of family feuds back there.
I could imagine that, yeah. Given the hostility between you and I today, it may have existed 400 years ago.
What if there was like a family rivalry and we're like breaking the curse, right?
It's like Romeo and Juliet. No.
No, it's not like Romeo and Juliet.
What was the Shakespearean novel
about? Oh, Hatfields and McCoy. And
is that what it was?
No.
That, no, I think it was Romeo and Juliet. Capulet.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. I was talking about Hatfield and McCoy was something here in America.
Is that a Western?
Some famous feud between two families. I forget what it's about, but maybe we can Google that later.
We can Google that later. Yeah, this isn't part of the pod. So, I guess to kind of wrap up our discussion about your trip, I want to ask you, had you traveled outside the country extensively prior to this trip?
No.
So what are a couple of the things that you really noticed, that you really recognized about being in a whole slew of different cultures for the very first time?
Good question. Man, just the fact that, yeah, you realize that there's like a whole country, continents actually, of people, of other humans that go about life in a sort of different way. They have different foods they eat. Heck, they have different languages they speak in. They dress differently. And for me, it was just really eye-opening and just cool just to kind of sit back and observe as I was going through all these different countries and look at the differences in societies and people. But like I said before, probably the coolest thing that I realized was with all the differences, that at the same time, like I said, humanity is such a common thing that we obviously all share, and that it's not that hard to connect with people. Granted, you can both speak the same language, which, you know, we're the only lazy people who don't learn others' languages.
True.
Everyone yes. knows English, so that made it easy for me. But yeah, it was just super fun to get to know other people from different countries and, you know, talk about the things that we had experienced in a similar way in life, I guess. And just, I mean, being over there, it's throughout Europe, I got to go to some really sweet museums and whatnot and see some really old architecture and whatnot. And that was cool just to kind of see history just comes alive whenever you see, wow, like this whole, you know, street was constructed in the 10th century, you know. And it's cool for me to just realize that all the like things I've read in history books and whatnot, like, oh, that happened here, you know. So that's one of the valuable things that I thought it gives you when you travel in places like that.
So you grew up in Tennessee, right?
Gallatin, Tennessee.
Yep.
Whole life.
What is something from your experience overseas that you would ideally bring back and implant within kind of local society here in Nashville?
Greeting people with a kiss on the cheek.
Okay.
No. But I actually started to really like that. That's what everyone does in Spain.
That's a Spanish thing. I don't think that's the rest of Europe.
Yeah, thing, no, it? It's not. That was yeah. just Spain. But
because I think it's in when I lived in Dubai, everybody would always greet each other with a kiss on the cheek. So I think it's a Islamic, because there's so many Moors in Spain.
Oh, yeah.
Islamic descent. I think it may have originated from there. Don't quote me on that, because I am definitely not an expert on the origins of kissing other people on the cheek. But
oh man, one thing bringing back, you know, it's a good question. I think, do you mean as in sort of just certain things that I saw people doing there?
Like, I guess a thing that was culturally accepted over there that may not necessarily be here in Tennessee that you'd like to see changed or altered in some way.
So, one thing that I did notice in most of the places I was in, which that I think America is not great at doing, is how much they value like meal times with each other. Mm. It's not like a slow rushed, or it's not like a fast rush process of just eat your food and then go on about your business. Especially in Spain, there's a girl that I'm friends with that has been there for the year teaching, and we got to go have dinner with her and some of her local friends that she had met. Which, first of all, in Spain, they eat dinner at like 9 or 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's really
weird.
They
eat dinner really late.
Yeah. But they love to just sit and eat and, you know, drink wine and just hang out for like, you know, a couple hours during dinner time. And same with like in Iceland, we would sit and eat dinner and just like talk with that family for super long amounts of time. And I think that's such a cool practice and time to like, you know, reflect on your day with your family and your friends and whatnot. And I'm trying to think if we did it anywhere else, but you would also like, this is actually kind of cool, in Barcelona we had this top balcony, and I noticed like two nights in a row there you can see into the apartments everywhere around you. And there is this family, at least I saw it two nights in a row. I imagine it's probably a nightly thing. But their dinner table is right by the window. And at like 8 or 9 o'clock, I went up there. And there was like 8 people all gathered around a table. And just like, they're out there just having conversation and eating together. And I just like to see them all eating together and talking and having a good time. But yeah, that's something that seemed to be a trend there. They put a lot of value in meal times together, not just being like, eat your food and go on about your business.
Right.
So, it's kind of just one little minor thing.
Interesting. What is your ideal next destination?
Oof, man, that's a really tough one, because being over there has given me...
Give the bug.
Oh,
give,
man,
the travel
I've
bug.
Got the wanderlust bug. I want to see it all now. But next, if I go back to Europe, which I want to do within the near-ish future, I want to do France and Italy, especially Italy. I'd say if there is one country I wanted to go to and spend a decent amount of time there, it'd be Italy. Just because we had a super quick layover in Milan. We did get to go out and walk around, but Italy is just the birthplace of so many cool things that we have now. And we met a guy from Rome when we were in Spain who was traveling, and he has like a lot of pride in just the Renaissance, and he's from Rome. He was born and raised in Rome, and he grew up in like a 14th century building. Pretty awesome. But I'd love to, I know everyone goes to Paris, but I think Paris is an awesome city, and I'd like to go there for a little bit and go down through like southern France and then cut over to Italy. That'd be awesome.
Sounds like a plan. So realistically though, I feel like the next, I don't know, like 7 to 10 years of your life are going to be occupied the study of medicine.
Yeah.
So,
thanks for reminding me of that.
I guess good question or a good thing to consider. How do you intend to balance that as a future med student who has caught the travel bug?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Gosh, you see, I've been, especially when I was working in my time off, I was like, man, I'm really excited
like
to start
landscaping.
Yeah. Well, landscaping, but also before that, like working at the orthopedic clinic, I was like, man, I'm really excited to start school and just start my career in medicine. But, you know, spending the time I did in Europe made me sort of think like, ah, dang it. I want like one more year to do this, you know, like, I do have, you get your summer off between first and second year of med school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when a lot of med students do like research or work in a clinic or something. They do something to, you know, build their CV for residency. But I can maybe throw a trip in there. Otherwise, I know a lot of medical students travel right after they finish their fourth year because I think you finish pretty early in the year and you have like 3 or 4 months before you start residency. So, and on top of that, a lot of times, I don't know if this is like a secret or like I should say it, but a lot of times people use their leftover financial aid loans.
No.
Yeah, I know.
Big secret.
Crazy.
Just spilled. Oh,
I know.
Shoot.
Don't tell anyone that I heard that. I don't know anyone personally that's done that, I swear. I anticipate that being a time to get back out there. I'll be ready for it for sure by then. Mm. So, yeah, I think I could swing it then.
Do you
want to join me?
We should. I was going to say, we should plan a trip.
Yeah, we really should.
That'd be a good time.
Dude, we can go to Scotland again. I would totally go back to Scotland.
Don't tempt me. See, the thing is, most of my world travel that I've done has been in college, and it hasn't included Europe. I've been everywhere else, but not Europe.
You have the most atypical international travel list.
Yeah.
You've been like everywhere but Europe.
And like I went to Europe in my youth with my family, but I haven't been as an adult.
Which makes such a difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
And so I am very excited to do Europe. I think I might do a lengthy trip before law school, like a 2 or 3 month escapade throughout the European continent. But that's not for a couple years, obviously. But we should definitely plan something.
Let's do it.
That'd be fun. I recently ended a trip I just got done with a trip with one of your fraternity brothers.
Yes. Old Mr. Jack Bell.
Senior Bell. Yes.
Senior Bell.
Captain Bell. He and I got along pretty well. I only wanted to kill him one time on the trip. So
why is that? Is this real?
Yeah, it's real.
You don't have to share. I mean,
it was over $3.
Well, heck
so,
yeah.
So we were on a bus.
Hey man, money's short nowadays.
Dude, and trust me, I was on a budget on this trip. But we were on a bus from Ollantaytambo, Peru.
Oh, Ollantaytambo.
Yeah, have you heard of that?
Great place.
It's an incredible place. To Cusco. And in Peru, you have to negotiate for your bus tickets everywhere you go. And so I negotiated our bus ticket down to 10 soles, which is $3. And he's like, okay, get on the bus, blah, blah, blah. Well, about 20 minutes outside of Cusco, he's like, okay, let me collect all your money. It's 20 soles per person. And I look at him, and in Spanish, I'm like, you told me 10 soles back in Ollantaytambo. And he was like, no, it's 20 for everybody. And I was like, no, here's 20 soles for Weston and I both. That's it. And he's like, no, like we're not, this bus is not moving until you give me the money.
Whoa.
And I look at Weston, I'm like, are you going to support me? And Weston's like, just give him the money. And I was like, Weston, this is a matter of principle. This man is not staying true to his word. And so I had to throw him that extra, well, $6, but three each, to pay for our bus ticket. And I was not happy with Weston. But that was the only time in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So I think that was pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good. Being that close with a person or people, especially traveling, you get to know the deep, like, every idiosyncrasy and, like, the highs and lows of people.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I think it would be a worthwhile experience for somebody you're about to marry. Mm-hmm. Like, to spend, like, 2 months traveling with that person.
Absolutely.
Because I think you'd learn a lot about them.
That is so true. I was with the same four people for a month in Europe. And
yeah,
I mean, that was...
You haven't seen them since, right?
I've seen a couple of them once. But that reminds me, we got really screwed over by an Uber driver who said that the cost from one airport to another, because we went to the wrong airport, would be $100. Well, he drives us there, and... we pull up, and he's kind of acting sort of weird, and he gets out real quick, puts our bags on the ground, is like, all right, thank you, and jets off. And I get this notification on my phone: your Uber is complete, $262.
What city was this?
Milan.
Oh my.
And he said $100, because I was like, hey man, like, the taxi company over here is trying to charge us like $150, and he was like, oh no, I'll beat that, $100, it'll be $100. And yeah, totally screwed us, man. I tried to get it repealed and whatnot, and it didn't work. And is it repeal or appealed?
Repeal.
I think it's appealed. Anyways, they were like, no, sorry, that's the accurate. You know, we looked at the mileage, and that's what it should cost. Sorry, don't always listen to your Uber driver. Pretty
much. You got shafted.
So bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, and I was pissy over $3. You got shafted for a solid $250.
Yep. Wow. It was, that was like the second very, very low point besides, you know, messing up the camper. Anyways, let's not dwell on the bad parts of the trip.
Yeah, cool. Well, Matt Spence, thanks for coming on the pod.
Yes.
I appreciate it a lot. You had some very good, good thoughts and intuitions. Anything you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
Hey, for all you millennials out there, I highly recommend trying to cut out a little span of time to travel in Europe. I bought my plane ticket to Spain for like $315. Tap Portugal, check it out. No, I'm not receiving any promotions for that. I wish I would. Maybe I should tell them that I'm plugging them, but yeah, you should do it. You should travel, people, while you're young. It's totally worth it.
All right, and with that, we bid thee adieu. Matt, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. As always, check out our website, betweentwomillennials.com, or send us an email, betweentwomillennials@gmail.com, and we will be back on Monday with another regular episode.
Yes, we will be back on Monday.
The two of us. Just kidding. Nick, I love you. All right, bye, guys.
Bye.